Hello, fellow homebrewers. JP here, and I want to introduce to you the brand new Brewbuilt X1 Conical Series available at More Beer. More Beer sells the highest standard in homebrewing equipment, and the Brewbuilt Conicals are just that. They're made from mirror-polished 304 stainless steel, and they come with loads of features that you and I have been looking for. They have a full 2-inch bottom dump valve, which will eliminate your clogging issues, while the sturdy base includes 4 reinforced legs, just like those big pro tanks do. More Beer also carries the Brewbuilt line of options and add-ons like casters, pressure kits, and even external glycol chillers. So you can find out more about the new Brewbuilt X1 conical uni tanks by going over to morebeer.com for detailed videos on the entire line of Brewbuilt conicals. You can trust Brewbuilt with your next fermentation, and you can trust More Beer to find the right conical for you. Brewbuilt at morebeer.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Everybody, welcome to this session. I'm back. We're back in the studio for another live show. We're hanging out on YouTube right now if you want to go check it out there. And my good friend Sean Sully O'Sullivan is back in the studio with me.
I'm back. It feels great. It's been a while.
I love having you back.
It's good to see you. You look handsome as ever.
Thank you.
You really do. You got the close crop beard. Mm-hmm. You look distinguished.
I appreciate that. I must look better than I feel. I had a birthday weekend. Several birthdays to celebrate this weekend.
Wow, multiple birthdays.
Yeah, there was three of us celebrating birthdays. Went to the Giants game on Saturday. That was a great time. Went to a concert yesterday in your hood.
You saw the Counting Crows.
I saw the Counting Crows with the opener, which I'm often embarrassed to say I'm a big fan of, Dashboard Confessional, which is a super like early 2000s emo band, like very emo. But I love them, and so that was
how they
cool.
do. Yeah. Was it good? Was the show good?
So the Dashboard was good.
Yeah.
Counting Crows was a little kind of bland.
Really?
Yeah. And I'm a pretty big Counting Crows fan.
Yeah, I'm a fan as well. But anyway, what happened?
Well, I just feel like the singer, the main guy,
Adam
Duritz.
Call him out.
You know, and he writes all those great lyrics and stuff. He's not a great performer.
Okay.
Like, he doesn't do a lot. But then on top of that, you know, and we're getting up in age, Adam and me.
Yeah, okay.
And he kind of skipped out on a lot of the high notes.
Well, when you get older, you have a hard time getting to the high notes.
Yeah, so. But he got some of them, but not others. And the problem with a band like that is half of the hooks in the songs are his high notes.
You got to hit the post
so,
with that.
You know, if you can't do it, don't tour or get someone to do it. So, like, you know, their biggest hit, not my favorite song or anything, but a great hit, Mr. Jones,
that's
right?
That's the hit.
That's how they bust out on the scene. He left all of the high notes to the crowd, which was a total cop-out. Now, of course, the crowd accepted the challenge because everyone loves to sing along to their favorite song. But it was like, you know, Mr. And then just hands over the microphone.
He was already doing
the
crowd participation routine.
Yeah. I liked it.
I mean, it's a couple of interesting things about the Counting Crows. First of all, when I first moved up to Berkeley back in the 90s, mid-90s, I remember I was living like a couple blocks from the Greek Theaters, which is where you saw the show there, near UC Berkeley.
Great venue.
Yeah, amazing venue. And so I remember walking to the show, and this is where I thought, man, this is pretty cool up here. I walked up, and they just let me in, and the Counting Crows were playing.
They just completely let you in.
Yeah, and then Adam tells a story. I don't know if he told it last night, but his parents just live right up the street at in North Berkeley. And he walks to the show, apparently. I mean, I walk by his parents' house all the time. I haven't had dinner there yet. but it looks like Adam has, though, because he's kind of...
Could be. Yeah. Yeah, he did definitely. And he did mention that. He didn't say he walked yesterday, but he did say he walked. Like for his first show ever there, he walked, which he thought was cool.
Yeah,
there's rumors too that he's like sober now, and a lot of times, which, look, I'm proud of people. There's folks in my family who've had to go through that. But, you know, as a fan of music, that's often a problem.
Well,
for the quality of the music.
There's always the tortured artists, and so when they seek refuge in like drinking alcohol. But I think he suffers from a condition where he sort of disassociates from like reality or something like that. So maybe that was brought on by alcohol.
I read that too. Yeah. Yeah, like he has like kind of a dissociative disorder.
Yeah.
By the way, I've had to kill YouTube, everybody. It's just wasn't doing what it's supposed to do. So I don't know what to do about that.
Welcome to the Adam Dirt Show.
I know, exactly. Yeah, like I'm the one phoning it in. anyway, overall, you know, it was a good show. Yeah.
Well, the venue is amazing. So, I mean, honestly, you know, you sit there and wherever you are, it's just fantastic.
The venue is absolutely amazing. The weather was gorgeous. Yep. It was a perfect night. And then some of the things I noticed there are going to tie into our show today, too, which is basically... So, first of all, thanks to our sponsor, More Beer. You can go to morebeer.com, check them out right now, and everything that they do is just wonderful. Whether you're a pro brewer or a home brewer, they've got it for you. You know, you can buy hops as a pro there. You can buy equipment as a pro there. And you home brewers, you already know about the gloriousness of More Beer. So go to morebeer.com. It's been 18 years, and they're still sponsoring this show. And love them for it. So go check them out. Check out their YouTube page also. They run their YouTube page better than I run my YouTube page, clearly. still doing a lot of content over there, which is like demonstrations about how to use some of their equipment. They do free beer Fridays, all sorts of good stuff. So go check out our wonderful sponsor, More Beer. So, yeah, literally, it wasn't even that long ago. Just like a week ago, I reached out to Sully. I realized two things. A, I haven't seen you in a while.
It's been a while.
And I've buzzed you a couple times. You know, hey, do you want to have dinner? You want to do this? But we're both busy. But I know that you love doing shows. And so I was like, I haven't seen Sully.
It's been a while.
And my first thought was, not only have I not seen Sully, I don't really know what's been happening with the 21st Amendment. I know some stuff. I do promotions for you guys. I know you guys just had August Fest.
We had August Fest, our big celebration down in San Leandro.
Yep. I know about all your beer releases because I get that information.
The marketing team is doing their job.
They're
awesome.
Totally doing their job. I listen to a lot of Giants games.
Oh, yeah.
The 21st Out, brought to you by the 21st Amendment.
Amazing? I remember when we started doing that, I thought, oh, this is priceless. This is great.
Sully, the first time I heard that, I kind of lost my mind. I think I texted you immediately.
I think you did.
But in a good way. I mean, I was so like, it was a really proud moment. For me, I've grown up as a Giants fan since I've known you. Like, I'm a late bloomer to the Bay Area. Yeah. So since I got involved with 2&A is when I really started going to Giants games. And so to hear you guys on there, I was like, oh, I'm listening to like Dave Fleming, our announcer, say the 21st Out, brought to you by the 21st Amendment.
It's crazy. I mean, when we first started doing that, because, you know, I'm a new Giants fan. I mean, I basically moved to the Bay Area and became a Giants fan because I opened up a pub 2 blocks from where the Giants
played. Right, right, yeah.
You know, I used to live in LA. We won't talk about that.
Yeah.
So anyway, I just remember when I heard that for the first time, it blew my mind too. I was like, wow, I knew we were going to do it. You know, I knew this was going to happen. But like when it happens and you hear these voices, these iconic voices, is calling the Giants games.
Yes.
Your head blows up. It's insane.
To me, it's one of those, and we're going to, like I said, we're going to dive into a lot of this stuff, but to me, it's one of those like, we've made it moments, even if maybe you don't feel that way. Yeah, to me, just the the iconicism, is that a word, of hearing your favorite announcers say the your name.
Well,
is
that's interesting.
Cool.
You should say that, because everybody always says, "Well, don't you feel? I mean, in the, you know, Pat, do you feel successful, or you feel like, you know, you got your beer like in more states and all this?" I never feel that way,
right.
But it's funny because there's these little touch points that happen. They're really stupid and dumb. One of them was the 21st out.
Nice.
That blew my mind. The other one was when we were on Virgin America. And like, we got the beer in the air there back when Virgin America
I remember around. That, yeah.
And I, the cool whole thing was like, I wanted to take press photos down on the tarmac at SFO. And once that happened, I was like, okay, this is cool.
I remember that. You guys were super stoked about that. And the photos were fantastic, by the way.
It was crazy. It was like, honestly, having beer on that plane, like our brew free or die. And then we had like Sneak Attack one time, like a Saison with cardamom, like on an airplane.
Right.
Like I was like, oh, I'll have four.
But these are cool milestones.
So anyway, going back to it, you have like these little moments where you kind of like, that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
So, because I mean, you know, running a business has this everyday challenges, and you sometimes don't look in the rearview mirror because you're always looking forward, or you're solving the issue in front of you at that moment.
Totally. You and I have talked about this before. I have a major problem with that, celebrating your successes, right? But you have to. If you don't, then it's all just what's it for? Because there's been plenty for you, for me, and but if you just, I'm definitely a. I'm a what have you done for me lately guy. That's how I talk to myself. What have you done for me lately, Justin?
I think you have a tattoo on your arm that says that. No, I mean, interesting, like August Fest, which we just had, which is like, you know, it's essentially it's our anniversary. You know, we opened August 2nd of 2000. So we have it in August. We call it August Fest. We're very clever. And, you know, when you go there and you see all those people there and all the collabs I did with other breweries and all this, I mean, that's kind of a moment because you get to, you kind of enjoy it. You're walking around, people are coming up to you. You know, I actually, it's funny because the other day, kind of along those lines, like looking in the rearview mirror, or somebody saying somebody said, well, you're like an entrepreneur. And I said, I don't feel that way at all. I feel like I just followed a passion and a path. I didn't go to and this is no slight on anybody who goes to like, let's say business school and then, finds something and finds a widget or a service or something like that and then goes for it and does that. Mine was the other way around. It was more like, you know, I guess the tail wagging the dog, so to speak, or maybe it's the other way around. I don't know. But, but the idea that, you know, I don't feel that way.
You feel more like a brewer than you do.
I am. Yeah. I feel definitely today. I feel like a brewer.
Well, and I always, I've had to, like I said, I've wrestled with that too. I've felt more like a broadcaster or fucking webcaster or whatever I have to be, than an entrepreneur. But it turns out I've started a couple different companies around this, you know? And so, I've had to wrap my head around that too. But I think it's also because I don't consider myself an expert at being an entrepreneur. So it's a hard word for me.
Yeah, but what is an expert at being an entrepreneur? I mean, this is definitely a rabbit hole a little bit, but I mean, like I've been invited to speak at entrepreneur like events, and every time I'm like, I go like, what? Well, first of all, I think I have to pay to do it. So I'm always like suspicious right away.
Yeah, it's weird.
And I'm like, I'm not gonna go do, I mean, like, oh, we have a couple of entrepreneurs here, Justin Crosley and Sean O'Sullivan.
Right.
And, you know, this guy that's like, you know, started like an AI program for getting your nails done.
Right.
Something like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It doesn't feel like the same field.
No. You know, it's just, I think when your passion drives your direction, it's just what it is. I mean, it's like, we started small as a little pub in San Francisco. Everybody knows the story at 563 Second Street, just two blocks from Giants Park.
That's right.
Remember that?
Yeah.
And then it just kind of like blew up. It kind of got bigger and bigger. Not blew up, but it definitely was, all right, we're doing this now. Okay, we're brewing in Cold Spring. We're selling beer on both sides of the country. All right. Now we just built this massive brewery in San Leandro. So it's like, you know, you don't really...
But you did guide it that way, and I watched you do that, and so that's sort of what brings me to how this topic of the show came up, because I was like, well, I want to know what's going on with 2NA behind the scenes already, and then secondarily, I thought, who better to talk to me about the state of the industry right now than Sully? Because even though you're saying it sort of happened and you stumbled on it, there's truth to that.
Yeah.
But I also remember talking to you every step of the way. I remember talking to you about your first canning line.
Yeah.
And you were like, Justin, cans. You'll see.
That's right, cans.
And I was like, I don't know, Sully. Maybe.
Yeah, but you weren't alone in that. I mean, we started canning in a little two-head filler, you know, in the back of the pub in San Francisco in 2006.
I was there.
And there was like 25 craft breweries in the country that were putting their beer in cans at the time. Now, there were only 2,500 craft breweries, I think, in the country at the time, around 2000, whatever it was. And so we talked a lot about, like, you know, you know, the can rather than the beer inside, because people didn't get it as a head scratcher. Now, you know, every single craft brewery puts their beer in cans.
Of course. Well, and you know, COVID really affected that too. Yep. Like the 16-ounce can format. By
that
the way,
blew
it's
up.
And you'll know this better than me too. Again, why I think it's great that you're here. So I had a friend in town, a mutual friend of ours, Adam from Denver. Adam and Nikki were in town to celebrate.
Oh, okay.
And we went to the our liquor store that has a bunch of cans, even more cans than here at the Hop Grenade. And it's all 16-ounce can format, just everywhere he looks. And Adam was saying, you know, in Colorado, it's still not this big, not this 16-ounce format. 12-ounce has gotten bigger and bigger. A lot of 12-packs out of Odell's, you know, you name it. But the way I've seen the industry here in California, the 16-ounce can just became king during COVID. And that's not stopped.
I mean, I definitely agree with you on that. I mean, what's interesting is you see pockets of other parts of the country where 16-ounce cans are very popular. Like in Massachusetts, it's huge.
Okay.
It's like, that's the format they want.
Okay.
You know, and like you said, like when COVID happened, you had all these breweries that like needed to move their beer. And so, you know, a lot of them, you know, really leaned in. And then the mobile canning, you know, services just blew up. And
yeah.
Then, you know, some breweries had canning lines and kind of leaned into that, or just, you know, were just getting canning lines. So they really, that benefited them a lot. So yeah, that whole format is.
And hasn't changed.
It hasn't changed. No, it's like, that's kind of what it is right now. I mean, it changes. I mean, this industry ebbs and flows all the time. I mean, 12 ounce six packs are, you know, popular, of course.
Sure.
But now it's like, you know, now it's like 19 twos.
Right.
Which is, you know, this large format can, sort of a convenience store can.
Yeah.
You know, a single single use, single, you know, it's like, you know, you just buy one and you drink it. So.
Which is kind of funny, because years ago, a can that size had sort of a package that size had like a stigma to
it.
Right. Like, okay, you're just kind of catching your buzz or whatever. But if you think about it, it does. It is a convenience thing. So I went to the Giants game Saturday.
Yep.
Beat the Rockies. That was cool. And throughout the park, you kind of have your choice between 12-ounce and 19-2s. And at the ballpark, 19-2 is a fantastic format.
Yeah.
And it's a format of convenience. I'm not trying to drink 10 of those and get hammered, but if I got to go wait in line once and I can get 100%. A 19-2, so it's weird how even these stigmas have fallen aside.
Well, it is interesting, because, I mean, that is exactly what it is. I mean, look, you know, the ballpark concessionaires, they want you to just get in line, get your, you know, take your money and then, you know, get out of there. So
yeah,
they want you to go back and back and forth all the time. So that's definitely, and it's also convenience stores have started to drive that all. And grocery stores as well. So, and what's even interesting is that, like, now it's like, you know, IPA is like 9% alcohol. You're seeing like a lot of like craft breweries, we're now playing in that space. So you're seeing like higher alcohol IPAs, double IPAs in a 19.2-ounce can, and I think it's because that's what the customer wants. So
and I've even noticed my taste doing that too. First of all, I want to cop to something, and you were here when I did it. I think I was doing a live read for 2&A once several years ago, mm-hmm. when you guys were just starting the 19.2s. And I was like confused by it. And I think in the middle of the live read, I looked over at you and I was like, 19.2, Sully? Like what? We can't just decide on 12 or 16. We have to mess with 19.2. But you were ahead of me and you were realizing that there's these other avenues where the 19.2 is perfect.
Well, I mean, you have to see what's going on. I mean, we look at a lot of market trends. We see what's going on. We've got an incredible sales and marketing department. It's not very large, but I mean, they're folks that do their job really well. And so you kind of see like what's going on, what's selling in the larger major grocery stores, you know,
sure.
what's selling across the country, like, you know, different pockets of opportunity. You know, like I was saying, like Massachusetts, they've like, it's like they want 16-ounce cans. And so, you know, you're having to like consider what format can you want to put in those specific markets and sort of to compete at that level. So
it makes sense. Okay. So now I want to go back to this higher alcohol thing in the 19.2.
Okay.
All right. So here's another thing I used to make fun of, like, and all of us who've owned a restaurant or own a bar, or if you've been a beer nerd long enough, you know that the thing that used to get asked all the time was, what's your highest alcohol beer? Right. And we always like thought of those people as kind of like knuckleheads. Right.
Yeah.
And then that sort of changed. Like, people stopped asking about high alcohol. They stopped asking about IBUs. They just started asking about what's your haziest. Well, my opinion is that economics has brought back the question, what's your highest alcohol beer? Or maybe I would like a double IPA in a 19.2, because I'm not going to have four of them anymore.
Well,
I'm going to have one.
And also those are priced, you know, appropriately, so 19.2 ounce, you know, double IPA is, you know, it's actually a good bargain. And that's, I think you're right. People are buying, because look, it's a bit of a hard time right now for everybody out there. So you're like looking, what am I going to spend my money on? What's, you know, what do I want? I mean, you know, it depends on what's important to you. And, you know, maybe at that time that like single serve 19.2 is like going to, you know, 8-9% alcohol is going to like satisfy what you need.
Totally. Again, at baseball games, I found myself just ordering my, you know, my habit beer and just go get my Sierra Pale Ale in a 19.2 or 16, whatever. And as time went on and I realized that they also had like, I don't even remember what it's called.
Torpedo.
Or their purple can is like Hazy Big Thing or something. Yeah. I don't know. But it's a double, right? Yeah. And I was like, well, I'm paying $20 for this thing anyway.
Yeah, you start doing the math.
Maybe I'll have one instead of two pails.
Yeah.
Right? And you just do a little bit of the math. And so, but I do think there's another component to it. I think economics is huge. I also think y'all have gotten better at higher alcohol beers. Right? Like, I used to double and triple IPAs. Yeah. They were just so sweet, because we felt we had to have that enormous backbone.
Yes, the old backbone.
Or overly hoppy or whatever. Yeah. And now, I don't know, most of you guys are brewing some doubles that just taste like an IPA to me anyway.
Well, that's the,
for a better bargain.
Well, that's true. I mean, it's like the drinkability has definitely changed over the years. Like you said, I mean, you know, back in the day, I mean, it was like a lot of caramel malt and, you know, bodybuilding malt that was like supporting this quote unquote hop bitterness. And now, I mean, the drinkability has gone through the roof because you've leaned the beer out. You're going with lighter malts, and maybe you're even like just, you know, detracting from the bitterness a little bit. Your hop, you know, you're putting a little bit more hop aroma and flavor in there. That's what you notice. Like next time you have a, you know, a 19.2 ounce, you know, double IPA, just, you know, first of all, you can't smell it if you're drinking out of the can. So that's
true.
So you get that retro nasal thing going on there. So you should just kind of feel your way through it. So when you're a ball game, you're not really, you're going to put your nose up to the can. Well, I probably would. You probably would. Just to see what's going on there, because we're nerds that way. But, you know, so the hop flavor, I think, is really important, honestly. I mean, I think that's where you're going to, and you want it to be lean. You want it to finish dry. You want, you know, because you want people to order another one and another one. So,
and it's changed a lot. Yeah, but not too many, you know. Look, I've had my fair share of too many. That's another problem, actually. Some of the doubles are so easy drinking now. I got myself in trouble the other night with that. And, and I warned somebody else, too. I was like, hey, Adam, just be careful with these. They'll get you in trouble. And then I didn't heed my own.
Well, you're drinking out of a can. You're at a concert or a ball game. You're distracted.
Yeah, totally.
And you're sitting there and you're like, you know, it's very easy. Your buddy goes, hey, you want another, you know, Torpedo or, you know, a Hazy Big Thing or whatever it is.
You're like, absolutely. Sure, the weather's nice. The music's good. I'll have another one.
Yeah. $20, whatever.
Well, let's talk about you.
Vicodin in a can.
Yes, kind of. Yeah. Let's talk about you before we have to take a break, too. Okay. Because this is another thing that I found, I don't know if fascinating is the right word. I'm so interested in you sometimes, Sully, because we've grown up together.
We have. We really have.
And honestly. And I like watching the progression of the 21st Amendment. And then in this case, what I'm about to bring up, your role. So, of course, when I met you, you're the brewer at the 21st Amendment Brew Pub in San Francisco.
Yes.
And I watched all of your different progressions, and I remember you talking to Pete Schlossberg, and I remember Pete kind of telling you guys, like, you know, you have a choice here. Maybe you guys want to go for it. Maybe you want to try to get past this brew pub, and here's some advice. And you guys are kind of listening to several people about what to do next.
Yep.
But you were the brewer. Mm-hmm. Half the days I went and met with you, Sully, you had your rubber boots on.
Yep.
Right? And then as you expanded, of course, the business requires you to do other things.
Yes.
And then I've met, I think, every single brewer who's ever worked for you. I'm pretty sure.
Probably have, actually,
I might be friends with some of them still. I don't even know. Yeah.
But I haven't been that many, though, in 23 years, though. It's just interesting. So.
No, that's a good point. Yeah. Actually, I can only think of two right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you've now been back in the brewery in San Francisco. So you opened, of course, San Leandro, which is the production facility.
Yes.
But you kept the brew pub, and now you're the brew pub brewer.
Yeah, it's kind of nuts. It's I always say it's not sustainable. But I mean,
that makes sense.
What's happened is that, you know, I have like this role as the brewmaster, of course, at the in San Leandro, sort of guiding a team there and working with them. They're a great team too. And then also I've like had to put my boots back on. And in large part, it's because it has not been that busy.
Okay.
And so in San Francisco. And so it didn't warrant like having a full-time person there.
Okay.
So I just started off going, I don't know, I'll just come in here and like, brew like a couple days a week and da-da-da-da. And then what's turned into it though, it's like it's definitely turned into more of a more tasks than I like envisioned. So,
okay.
You know, I'm working 6 to 7 days a week right now.
All right.
And so, and I'm actually loving it. But it, like I said, it's not sustainable. So it's been great. It's been fun to get back in there. I mean, one of the reasons I got into being a brewer with boots on was I was working in Los Angeles at this law firm, mm-hmm. and I was wearing suits every day. And I was like, I don't want to do this. I want to get out of here. And I got, you know, moved to the Bay Area and became a brewer. And like, you know, I had this like what I say like my little like prison as at an office in LA at this law firm. And then I kind of moved up, became a brewer, and then like the company got, you know, moved along and became successful or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then now I have an office again.
Right. Right.
So, yeah, so it's been a lot of fun. It's actually been fun to innovate, honestly, because, okay. you know, before I'd have to guide innovation through somebody else or work with the team. And I still do, you know, can we come up with ideas and things we want to do and all this? It's a little like, I'm hiring a brewer right now, actually. It's just this past week we put a post
for the pub.
For the pub, just yeah. because I can't continue at this pace.
No, that makes sense. I yeah. mean, look, at your age.
Oh, please.
No,
stop
that's
it.
Not what I meant. What I was going to, even I've had to do the same thing here yeah. at the Hop Grenade. And so, yeah, there's a point where like other tasks and yeah. that are very important to the company
yeah.
are not getting done when yeah. you're brewing that often.
Yeah,
too.
I mean, like I said, I have a great team in San Leandro, great group of people. But you know, I need to be there, you know, but yeah, I secretly yeah. love this.
Of course.
A lot.
That's awesome. So that was a question I had for you about like the innovation. So obviously, you know, it's a brew pub and it's a smaller system, but in a way, certainly more than ever before, it's a pilot system.
It is. Yeah.
It's a big pilot system, but it's a pilot system. So I assume that the beers you're creating there, you're feeling a little more creativity and a little more input about going back to San Leandro. Is
yeah,
that accurate?
Yeah, exactly. Like a good example is we came out with a cold IPA, you know, a seemingly controversial style. Although when you like, you know, get over the fact that you're not uncomfortable with the name, the beer is quite delicious.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I think of American Lager, you know, Budweiser and extreme steroids, so to speak, you know, just amped way up in all areas.
Yeah.
That's probably a bad analogy.
That's but, okay. It's fine.
And so, you know, I brewed probably 5 or 6 batches of that and we packaged it and it comes out, you know, in towards the winter, you know?
Yeah.
It's the classic like Mount Rushmore with our presidents there and they're all, there's a snow scene and all this. So it's perfect for,
nice.
You know, skiing and whatnot. So snowboarding. So anyway, I innovated on that for like literally like 5 or 6 batches. And
okay.
I really love that beer and yeah. I really feel like great about it and all that. So
I felt when I dove back in here basically during COVID and beyond, I ended up feeling like, oh, I was a little more detached from this creative venture, this whole venture, than I thought I was. I felt like things were running just fine and I ended up realizing like, oh, I'm really missing a lot of input and missing connection with my staff and with my customers and all of that. And so I wonder if that was part of your experience too, that even though you had to move on from the brewery and do other things, but when you came back, did you find out, oh yeah, this piece was missing, my connection to the brewery?
Well, I mean, I think, again, like I said, it's just selfish, mm-hmm, honestly, mm-hmm. And I just love it. I mean, okay. I'm kind of in the back there doing my own thing, you know. Today I brewed an American Red. When was the last time you had an American Red?
Nice. It's been a while.
So, you know, I said, all right, let's have American Red with Comet and Centennial. And so, you know, and things went wrong and I love it.
Yeah.
Know?
Yeah.
You know, the favorite part of the day today was like when I came, I walked to Bart and, you know, took the 3-hour like Bart ride out to Nevada
to
here.
East Bay
here.
Yeah.
And so came out here and the best part of my day was I had, because I have a cut in my boot right now. This is so inside baseball. So I have a cut in my boot, so I have like wet socks. I hate wet socks. Brewers okay. hate wet socks. But yeah. I had a fresh pair of wet socks in my bag. That was the best part.
A literally, fresh like, pair of dry socks
dry
in your
socks,
bag.
Excuse
yes,
me. That's
yeah,
what, I,
yeah.
what did I say.
Yeah, fresh pair of wet socks
no,
in your
no, no,
bag.
No.
Yeah.
Well, now I do because the wet ones are in there.
Right,
now.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, it's like these little things. And I physically feel great. I've lost a ton of weight. I feel like I'm really like, you know.
It's a manual brew house still.
It is, the, yeah. So yeah. Anyway.
I love this.
Sully's back, but not for long.
But well, that being said, though, you've been back for 2 years, I think you said, right?
I've been trying to think about it. I think it's been probably, maybe it has been maybe a year and a half. I'd have to think about that.
Okay.
But it's been a while.
It's been a while, yeah. So it's not like a short little 2 month stint that you've done there.
No.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm trying to work it in so that I can actually come back when I get somebody on board, because I want to do that. The problem is when I've done that before, when I've had a brewer that's been working there, it's almost like you're kind of showing up for a photo shoot, you know, where it's like, okay, I'm going to come in next Tuesday and brew this. Okay. And then it's like all set up for me. It's like literally like, you know, I push a button. Okay. And we're brewing now. So I really like the, you know, come in the day before milling and just, I mean, get the whole brew set up. I mean, I love it. I mean, it's like,
it's a meditation.
It's a meditation. And honestly, it's reconnected me to the craft beer community in a lot of ways, especially with the people around me. You know, some of my friends have brew pubs and they're having challenging times right now. And so to reconnect with them, and you know, and just the San Francisco community, which it's coming back. It's just that I feel like, you know, of course, like with any industry right now, especially hospitality, there are challenges that are happening. So
yeah, well, that connection is what I meant. That's what I was asking, and you just answered it right there, that you have found like a new it's a new reconnection. Well, let's do this. Let's take a quick break because we are gonna. I wanted to use this as an opportunity to talk about the state of the industry too, state of the industry as well. You're in a unique, I think, position because you obviously run a brew pub, which we've been talking about, which has its own struggles, especially in a city like San Francisco that's waiting to come back. But you're also a large regional brewer. With the production facility in San Leandro. So I thought, what better person, like I said, to talk to than Sully? So let's do a quick break. When we come back, we'll do a little state of the industry talk with Sean O'Sullivan. Hang in there. It's The Session. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Session. Thank you for hanging out with us. We're still sitting with Sean Sully O'Sullivan from the 21st Amendment. You can go to 21st-amendment.com. Check it out. Check out their latest releases. Always putting out some new beer. And you can find it all over there at the 21st-amendment.com. All right, before the break, I was kind of teasing. We're going to get a little state of the industry.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing.
Well, so I have my finger on the pulse of it, but I honestly, because I hear from so many and I'm talking to different sized breweries all the time, for me, it can be a little confusing sometimes. Mm-hmm. Some of my brewer friends are just doing epically, like they've never done so well, which is a weird thing for me to hear because, you know, I hear from Bart Watson at the Brewers Association that craft beer is not on the decline, but, plateaued. I see even Anheuser-Busch dumping brands that they've purchased over the last decade. I think 10 Barrel and a bunch of others just got dumped. So I see all these things, and I realize that we're on this little roller coaster / pendulum, right? And I wondered about you. So what I was thinking was, the spot that the 21st Amendment is in as a, do you call yourselves or consider yourself a large regional brewery?
I would say nowadays. That. Yeah, we're kind of in that middle tier.
That's what I thought. Yeah. And like Heretic is an example of that. Mm-hmm. When you get into the larger breweries, of course, we're talking about the likes of Sierra Nevada and Sam Adams.
We're in 36 states.
So, and you guys are in 36 states as opposed to everywhere all the time.
Yeah.
Right? It's a good movie. and then you have you're still kind of, I don't know, I guess just local breweries, even though they're quite well distributed. You know, your Cellar Makers, your Alvarado Streets, right? And depending on where you are in this tier is where I've found the level of optimism I hear from brewers.
Yep.
And it made me wonder about you because you kind of live in a little bit of both worlds. You're a small brew pub as well as a large mid market brewery.
We're also a local brewery too.
Also a local
in the Bay Area. So
yeah, that hasn't sold, by the way. Can we just can we go ahead and celebrate that for a minute? Even though I won't be mad at you if you do. I've never been that guy. But you were a local independent brewery.
Yeah.
Who, about how many years ago did you open San Leandro?
It was back in 2015.
Okay, it's 2015. Yeah. So eight years ago.
That's
8 years ago, made the decision to, these are all my words, by the way, because I don't know the economics of what you did. But what I can say is you have made the decision 8 years ago, you and Nico, to dump a bunch of money into becoming a larger brewery.
Yeah, I mean, what happened was, I mean, the trend at craft beer at the time was there was just, you know, you know, epic growth. You know, we were growing like 25-35% a year, and we were still brewing out in Cold Spring, you know, at our partner brewery out there on their new, you know, state of the art system and whatnot. And so, you know, we were kind of running up against the wall of capacity with them, and also the ability to innovate. And so, you know, we took it upon ourselves, like in 2014, to like, you know, to start building this large brewery, you know. And so that was the journey we went on, because, you know, and we were, you know, and all craft breweries were doing at the time, I mean, large, you know, regional craft breweries. I mean, you saw, like, you know, New Belgium was opening a place out east, you know, and also Stone and Green Flash and Sierra as well. I mean, so breweries were like looking at, you know, new locations far afield, because they were sort of land trapped by their home space, their home territory. Yeah. So for us, it was an interesting move, because when we did it, we didn't have a legacy staff to build this thing. So where you have, like, let's say the larger breweries I just mentioned, they have people that work at these large breweries, and they can kind of like pick up and, let's say, move to Asheville and open a brewery out there. So for us, it was a challenge in that regard. And so, you know, some decisions we made, we probably wouldn't have made them again, you know?
Okay.
And that's just like, that's just the rearview mirror of like, well, maybe we shouldn't have done that. Maybe we, you know, but you just don't know when you're in it, you're kind of like moving along. So yeah. So 2014, you know, we started building this thing, and we started brewing in 2015.
Right. Really, and
that's
quick
when,
build.
And that's when craft beer kind of like took its little like hiccup at the time.
Sure.
And so, you know.
And then just to, as a recap for those and those who haven't heard you on here before, what size brewery did you build there?
So we built a 100-barrel GE system. That's the brew house. And so, and then we installed like 200 and 500-barrel tanks.
Okay.
So ginormous tanks, you know, with a capacity, initial capacity of 75,000 barrels.
Wow, yeah.
And then what's happened is that, but the brewery... So the brewery, if you just look at straight beer, it can do upwards of 300,000 barrels. And the canning line, which is state of the art, you've seen it. It's just this beautiful, you know, KHS system. It's just, it can spin as fast as that brewery can. So,
yeah.
So we could, you know, comfortably, this is beer too, you know, at the other beverages, you know, it doesn't take as long.
Sure.
But yeah,
and the canning line takes up, just from a real estate perspective, the canning line takes up as much, if not more, of the brew house than the brew house does, right?
Yeah,
of the building that you're in.
Yeah, it's
you know, massive.
We're in an old Kellogg factory, and so it's essentially a big box, and we dropped in the brewery and the cellar, and also the canning line and all the other stuff that goes with it, the lab and, you know, centrifuge and whatnot. So kegging line, and so.
And so right then, you said, is right when craft beer started to have its hiccup. Can I ask you this? Did you completely shit your pants at that moment? Like, because you had really gone all in.
Yeah.
And there was no turning back.
No, there wasn't. But you don't know when you're in it.
Okay.
You know, in like the rearview mirror, you kind of like see what's happening in the industry, and you see like there's a little bit of a, you know, you know, breweries are, you know, well, back, you know, in 2013, 2014, that's when you saw a lot of acquisitions happening.
Yeah.
And so that's when, like, craft beer was really hot in that regard. So, you know, breweries were being bought. I mean, the Ballast Point acquisition is the one everybody talks about.
Sure.
Lagunitas, you know.
But that was a that unicorn, you know.
Yeah. And so, but, you know, there were smaller ones that happened. You know, ABI was sort of playing in that space as well as Coors Miller and, or Coors and Miller. And so, so what happened was we, you know, in the retrospect, yeah, you can see it. And when it was happening, you're kind of like, all right, well, you know, we just start plowing around. We start like, we eventually then like partnered with Brooklyn Brewery.
Yep.
And so that actually put more feet on the ground.
Okay. That was like a sales partnership basically, right?
Yeah. So we created a sales platform with them. So we went from like, I think we had 10, you know, salespeople. I might not have that wrong number, right? But we went to 75 salespeople in the country. And that was, we were doing that with Funkworks.
Yep. Brooklyn and Funkworks.
Yeah. And so that, you know, that went along for a while and, you know, we were going to brew their beer out in San Leandro. We did that for a little bit also with Funkworks.
Okay.
But then, you know, the great equalizer, COVID happened.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, and then, you know, that was, you know, it was a great idea until it wasn't a good idea.
Sure. So when I think I've told you this story before, but when I opened our Fort Collins, Colorado location, you know, got sold a pretty good bill of goods about that spot. Looked very similar to here, had a park out front. They're going to do concerts, all this stuff.
Yep, I've been there.
And I was more than halfway through construction. We were probably about a month away from opening, maybe 2 months away from opening. And I had done some other market research before, of course. I'm not a complete moron, but I did feel like a complete moron at this moment. But just it makes me think about this, how, like you're saying, we put all this money in the brewery and then this hiccup happened.
Yeah.
Well, I remember going to the Mexican restaurant about three doors down from the Hop Grenade on a Saturday, on a warm summer Saturday night. And I was there at about 8:30, and there was not that many people in the restaurant at all, mm-hmm. this Mexican restaurant I'm at. And I remember I asked a manager, I said, "Hey, man, you know, is it usually like this, or is this like something happening?" And he goes, "Oh, no, it's not usually like this at all. It's usually way slower."
Oh my gosh.
And I did shit my pants. I knew immediately before we ever opened the Hop Grenade Fort Collins.
Yeah.
I was probably fucked.
Oh my God.
And I didn't put anywhere near into what you guys probably did at the brewery, yeah. but a lot. And
well, I mean,
I was somewhat terrified.
Yeah. Well, of course you were. And I was too, you know, at times, but I mean, you also start working the problem. You start yep. working the issue, yep. not the sure. problem, but you sure. look, you know, you're looking at what's going on in front of you, and you're looking for the opportunities. And that's when, you know, Brooklyn came along and had a great idea at the time, and it did work for a while.
Okay.
And it just, you know, it just went topsy-turvy once the whole COVID thing happened.
Sure.
And then we disbanded. We're not involved with them anymore.
Okay. So. Okay. But since then... and since COVID, like you say, the great equalizer sort of pushed things backwards a little bit. I haven't talked to you about any of this. So listeners at home, I don't have the answer to these questions ahead of time. Mm-hmm. I'm going to assume you're not brewing at capacity in San Leandro.
We're not.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, in a large part because we have this facility, this huge facility, we looked for opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what it turns out is that there is a need for co-packing, you know. So I guess you could say, we're still excited about beer. We're still out there selling our beer, you know, in all the states. And
which is obvious. Yeah, you guys are still pushing a lot of great beer.
Thank you. And so what we're doing is we're getting into co-packing. Now, what is co-packing? Co-packing is where essentially you're making somebody else's beverage. Now, of course, us in the beer space here just immediately think it's beer or possibly seltzer. But it actually goes beyond that. So, I mean, we have the ability with this, the innovation that we're doing there to actually go beyond the beer space.
Okay.
And what we're installing is a tunnel pasteurizer. So which runs as fast as our canning line, which is very fast. And so we have the ability to sort of make any beverage we can.
And a
pasteurizer, if you don't know, a tunnel pasteurizer, what it is, it's very simple. Louis Pasteur invented this whole concept of pasteurization.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like where warm water is sprinkled on a can after it's been filled. It goes through a tunnel.
Okay.
And so the warm water is being sprinkled on the can, and then it heats it up to like 160 degrees for like 10 minutes, and then it brings it back down.
So the can is sealed and done.
Yes.
It's been packaged cold, obviously.
Yes.
Otherwise, it would foam everywhere. Goes through this tunnel where it goes up to, how high did you say?
About 160, depending on the product.
Is it flash pasteurization? Is that what it's called?
No, flash pasteurization is like if you're like, let's say, running it through a tube and shell system so this is actually these cans come off the line. They're like little soldiers and they go into this big long tunnel with a conveyor belt and it moves it along. So they're heated up,
mm-hmm.
held, and then they're cooled back down.
I see. Okay.
And so
this is not really for beer. This is for other products.
Well, it can
products.
Be for beer. I mean, there's actually breweries, even large, you know, craft breweries that pasteurize their beer as well because it can be a little, you know, you have like shelf stability issues and all this, you know, and so, and then actually the innovation in pasteurization for craft beer has come way further than back in the day. It was like people poo-hooed it because it was like, well, the big breweries do that. Well, the innovations have happened since then that like where hoppy beers are actually able to be pasteurized. So anyway, so it's the kill step. So if there's anything living in there, it basically neutralizes it. And also when you're making products that have sugar in them, that's very like, you know, that can be very touch and go. So if you get like any sort of microbial, like even a, you know, nothing, you know, or just a drop of whatever, it can, you know, start fermenting, mm-hmm. and have it go bad. And so this is everything that you have that you buy
has been
pasteurized.
Yeah.
That can of Coca-Cola has been pasteurized.
Right.
That
right,
milk
right.
you have has been pasteurized.
Sure. Sure.
So it's, so what's enabling us to do is that we now have a team now where we're going out and we are soliciting for contract partners. We're going to install this tunnel pasteurizer,
mm-hmm.
at the end of the month, end of, I think, in October.
Okay.
And we have people that have worked in the industry before. And so it's somewhat a survival mechanism, but I don't see it that way anymore. Okay. I see it as what we thought about the facility that you spoke of, the large facility, as being this huge anchor around our neck is now our greatest asset.
Sure.
Because not a lot of breweries have that ability to do what we have to do. We have like this amazing canning line, and we have this, you know, coupled with the pasteurizer and the ability to make any kind of beverage you want, you know, whether it's like, whether it's tea, juice, hard iced tea, you know, seltzer, beer, sure. Non-alc is really critical to pasteurize. Actually, we're going to start playing in that space as well.
Okay.
As the 21st Amendment. So
you have these other entrepreneurs, these other people putting out products that have not spent millions of dollars on a line like you.
Yeah.
Why not use ours? Similar to how you guys were partner brewing in Cold Springs.
Yeah, it's a little bit like we've definitely taken, you know, the idea from that. And, you know, and that's what we're doing. I mean, Cold Spring in some ways was going through some hard times, and then they pivoted into co-packing.
Okay.
And I feel like, you know, as entrepreneurs, Justin,
yes,
we have to pivot the industry. We have to pivot and to be successful. And so whether it's like, you know, like when craft brewers started making their own hard seltzer, I mean, that's like, you know, if you would have told me, you know, 3 years ago that I was going to put a tunnel pasteurizer in, I was like, I would kick you in the shins. Now I'm excited. I'm elated by it.
Right.
But also craft brewers, whether you're large or small, if you were like, well, one day you're going to make alcohol with just sugar water.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're going to add, you know, flavor to it.
Right.
And you're going to be excited about it.
Yeah. It's amazing. Well, and you're not the first brewery like this I don't know if I should say, because it was, I guess, a private conversation, but a friend of mine in the industry that you also know out in the South Bay, started making the same thing, the same pivot even before COVID, actually, even before it changed. He had spent a lot of money on packaging infrastructure, more than most breweries his size. And then the hiccup started even just before COVID, really, right? Like, so, yeah, and then he's like, yeah, I got to figure out how to just use this for other things. You don't just throw away. This is where I got yelled at by Jim Cook once for calling his brewery a factory.
Oh, wow.
Right? And it was at GABF, and I was doing an interview, and I'm exaggerating, but he didn't like it at all.
He poked the bear.
In some ways, your brewery can be a factory. And if we're not if we're not worried about semantics, it actually is. We're talking about an industrial space that has multiple uses.
Well, look, if you look at the arc of craft beer, when Nico and I got into it, it was way back in the day where you could make beer and kind of like put it out there and people bought it. Now the competition has risen.
Yeah.
And there's a lot more of us. There's like 10,000 craft breweries right now.
Right. It's
and
insane.
And we're all like, you know, we're all scraping for, you know, market share, whether it's like at a pub level, in the store, at, you know, whatever, however you define that.
Right.
And I feel like, you know, it is a it's a mature business now, and so you have to make mature decisions in order to be successful. You can't look at it like as enthusiasts, a hobbyist like Nico and I were.
Yeah,
you know, you had to put your big, you know, your big adult pants on and and make it work or not,
or not know? Exactly. Or
it's innovate or die. That's a saying that's often said.
And let's be honest, because I think about this a lot too. This is our career, Sully.
Like, yes.
Am I starting another career? I don't know. So
well, maybe
you
got
to go.
Maybe
what you, like you got, use what you have, do what you can. I love hearing this. And I knew that you guys are smart enough to figure this out, especially when I saw that facility. So, brewery, if you're Jim.
You can call it a facility.
Facility.
A beer factory has kind of a nice little ring
bad,
to it.
I don't think.
It's not.
It's really not.
I'm sure Jim's doing fine with his brewery.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I wasn't too worried about it either.
Yeah.
Well, let's do this. Let's just take another quick break, because we got more to talk about on this topic, and I want to know what you think about just kind of the future. And to tease that, everything is cyclical.
Yes.
Right. And that's something I've struggled with, because it's hard to see that right now, that the cycle, it's always going to come back. Like, beer is not going anywhere. Craft beer, as we know and love it, it's not going anywhere, despite the naysayers. And so I like to talk about like what people think about that cycle and maybe where we are in it.
Just like fashion, it all comes back.
Yes. That's why I'm always in style.
or just a year away from it.
Exactly. Maybe that's more accurate. Hang in there. You're listening to The Session, and we'll be right back.
Since 1979, Williams Brewing has offered the finest equipment and freshest ingredients and the best customer service in the business. Their website features real-time inventory, which means if you can put it in your cart, they can guarantee it'll ship the same day by 4 p.m. on weekdays. Want easy and simple electric brewing? Check out the new Series 2 Mash and Boil, featuring an elevated grain basket so you don't have to calculate sparge water. Williams also features the full Kegland line, everything from Brewzilla to Maltzilla, and a huge selection of duo-tight fittings. Looking for a kegerator? Look no further than the Kegland Series X and Plus kegerators, which feature 4 and 8 keg capacity in a compact footprint, and free shipping to the lower 48. Interested in distilling? Look up their proven Williams American Bourbon and Brandy kits, as well as complete distilling equipment packages and conversion kits for popular systems like the Mash and Boil, Anvil, and the Grainfather. Check them out today. Go to williamsbrewing.com to browse their vast selection.
Welcome back to The Session. Thank you for hanging out with us today. We are still hanging out with Sean Sully O'Sullivan and talking about 21st Amendment and the state of the industry. I want to thank a couple more of our sponsors before we move on. Don't forget about Beersmith. Beersmith 3 is out now, and you can get their free web editor edition for 30 days. You can go check it out and try it. The pros use it. The amateurs use it. Everybody uses it. Beersmith. Brad's a great guy, and is just always innovating that software. So go check out Beersmith 3. Go to beersmith.com and get your free 30-day trial on their web editor, and then you can just download it all to your devices, and it does everything you need it to do. And thank to them for being a sponsor for so long. Just great people over there. All right, so we're talking about the state of the industry still.
State of the industry.
I know, which we're, you know, we're covering like our little corner of the state of the industry, yeah. I guess. But there's so much to it that I wanted to keep covering it with you. Now, you're not just making changes at the San Leandro Brewery, which we're talking yeah. about, like just repurposing and reorganizing and using that
new technology
canning yeah. line and for innovation. Other things. But you're doing things at the brew pub too.
Yeah, we climbed our way out of COVID, and and we realized that we've been open for 23 years.
Oh my gosh,
down there. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Look at the gray hair. Or what little hair there is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, it needed a refresh.
Sure.
So, you know, we've had
You guys don't own the building.
We do not.
Yeah.
One of our investors owns it, actually.
And oh, nice.
He's
okay.
a great man.
Great.
And his family is too. And so so what happened was is that we said we have to double down on this. We need, you know, the place needs a paint job.
Yeah.
So we're repainting the building. We're like removing the sign and like taking down the that kind of like rinky silo on the side of the building.
So, oh, that's coming down.
Yeah,
huh?
We're going to put up murals and we're taking the large paintings down.
Okay.
Inside. And there's one of Nico and I, supposedly.
Yeah. supposedly. Yeah.
And so,
it's controversial whether or not.
And so, you know, we're just going to like give the place a refresh.
Okay.
And so, and we're also looking at the menu, and we're like, you know, getting it like dialed in. You know, we've been using a good friend of ours, Brian Reckow, who's a, you know, he's a consultant, but he's like worked in the beer space for a long time. And the funny story is back in 2004, when there was like 7 craft breweries or 8 craft breweries in San Francisco, he actually in the span of like 5 years worked at all of those. And we're the last one. He's never worked for us. So he used to make jokes to me. Like you make a joke to me and said, hey, can I just come and like, you know, get the jacket, you know, like close it out. Like, you know, I go to your place, I get the badge and all this stuff. And so I called him up one day and said, hey, I think we have an opportunity here. Like you've got a great, like, you know, an amazing like service industry background. I mean, he used to run, you know, he ran, Magnolia, and then help with the New Belgium, like shift from Little Creatures to New Belgium when that was going on. So,
okay, yeah.
Anyway, so it's been great. You know, it's been kind of like it's reinvigorated the whole space.
That's exciting.
Pay attention to service now, and it's just it needed it. You know,
and we've done a few things like that here too.
Yeah.
When you kind of just feel that you need it,
you got to do it.
And it's exciting to do that.
I'm having like some of the floor replaced in the brewery, which
nice.
Like tile that's chipping up and all that. So it's like those little things. And also, you know, Justin, we've always been there, And so when that neighborhood was not great back in the day when the Giants first came on board.
Right.
And there was a lot of like sketchy stuff going on down there. And then restaurants opened and didn't sometimes do well because they were looking at the dollar in a lot of ways, like trying to get folks in that, you know, for, you know, to turn it into a steakhouse or whatever. So like, you know, the level, the experience level was higher. And of course the checks were higher.
Yeah.
So we've always been this place like that offers value and, you know, and craft beer. And so it's completely approachable. So I really feel like, you know, as much as you hear kind of like somewhat of the doom and gloom of craft beer, I think there's an opportunity to kind of double down on it and really sort of embrace it. You know, we, you know, as you know, like Anchor closed recently, at least right now. And I feel like, you know, we have to like take the torch. Not that I want to like, you know, become Anchor or whatever, but I mean, I feel like, you know, I think that there's an opportunity for us to sort of like really, you know, say, hey, we're here. We're, you know, we're your like San Francisco craft brewery, you know? So let's get, you know, come on back and like, and look what we've done since then. So
did you go to the California Craft Brewers Conference this year?
I did not.
So David Walker was the keynote.
David Walker.
I actually talked to Nico about this there. Yeah. I saw Nico there. And David gave, you know, to summarize it, he was saying, we are now the stewards of beer in America. And I don't think he differentiated craft beer from beer.
Yeah.
He was kind of saying there's still a story to be told. And that you guys, and actually think me in some way, whatever my little leg in the beer industry, it's now our story to tell. And what we do with that matters. Like, it is important. So to still love your brand and to still, and to, like you just said, to that you don't want to be the next Anchor, but you're not going to shy away from carrying a torch. And I think it is important that those like you in the industry and Firestone, they own David Walker, that you guys do say, we have a responsibility for what beer, the landscape looks like in America. Because if you don't tell it, I think this is what David was getting at. If you guys don't tell it, the guys we trust, the ones that we don't trust are the ones that are going to get to tell it.
No, I completely agree. I mean, going back to your comment about, you know, the cyclical nature of, you know, consumerism.
Yeah.
And so, you know, craft beer kind of goes up and down. I mean, it did this back in the late 90s when, you know, you had a lot of, you know, not very good contract beer that was being thrown at the, you know, in the market and all that. And so then that rebounded. We had a, you know, a surge of growth in 2004 and beyond. So I don't disagree with David Walker at all. I think, you know, I mean, when I say that I don't want to be Anchor, well, maybe I would like to be Anchor. I mean, you know, it'd be fun if the 21st Amendment was around for 125 years like Anchor.
Sure.
You know, and Anchor will be around. That story is still being told. I mean, you know, they've been, you know, they've gone through different iterations. And so, you know, I think this is just the next cycle. I think for us who've like always had Anchor there for us in that one, in the form that we know it as, it's sort of unsettling for us. But if you kind of zoom out, and this is happens when you get older, you know, I had a big birthday this year, I turned 40. And so, And so I, you know, you kind of get a sense of like, okay, well, you know, this kind of goes up and down.
Yeah.
And I think if you stay on, if you keep your messaging and, you know, and your beliefs, honestly, just messaging, that sounds sort of like very marketing speak. But I mean, I think if you believe in what you're doing and you keep at it, I think it will come back to you.
Sure. Okay. Well, this is a perfect statement for my next question. And my next question comes from a personal place, right? Mm-hmm. So I struggle with, I have that positivity and I believe in what I'm doing and what we're doing here. But since COVID and since before a little bit with our failure in Fort Collins and the things, you know, it's sometimes hard to stay positive, right?
Yeah.
But I'm not a doom and gloom guy. I'm really not. But when you start to, when things keep happening that are out of your control, when there's a pandemic, when the results of the pandemic are an exploding homeless population in your neighborhood in San Francisco and in mine here in Concord, when laws are created, when there's some, when there's a bunch of failed policy around how we're figuring out how to deal with the dichotomy between capitalism and homelessness, right? It does sometimes get hard to stay optimistic. And I hear in your voice, you're like, no, I'm excited about this stuff.
Yeah.
But it is, sometimes it's a struggle, isn't it? Aren't you sometimes going like, oh, of course that fucking thing happened because all shitty things keep happening.
No, I don't look at it that way.
You don't.
I've become very good at compartmentalizing.
Okay.
I've also been in therapy for 15 years.
Sure,
so,
that
you
helps.
I got to
yeah.
do it after a bad breakup and when my mom was dying. So, I mean, I'm pretty I'm bullish on this industry. And
okay.
I think, yes.
Because San Francisco's tough right now.
It is tough, but it's just one part of our business too.
Sure.
And so I feel like, we feel like, buoyed by the idea of putting this work and making this place look better and getting people back and and also getting on top of the building and screaming and telling people, hey, we're still here and look, we're even better than ever. And
yeah,
so,
yeah.
And I think, I think people will come back. Mm-hmm. I think, it's, just the cyclical nature of everything. Yeah. If you focus on the bad stuff, if you look at the homelessness situation or the economics of what's happening in major cities, I mean, San Francisco is one of the last cities to sort of come back in some ways.
Yeah.
And I think that you can't look at it that way because it will tear you down.
Yeah.
And I think if you decide to go to that dark hole, well, then you're not doing a service to yourself or your business.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to sort of and then maybe you have to make major decisions that were unthinkable years ago.
Right.
And so, and those decisions are,
worse.
Well, they're not worse, but they're definitely hard. But yeah, in some ways, in retrospect, the hard decisions are the best decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I think, I have friends who are going through their breweries are closing. And I feel at some point you're okay, we gave it a shot. And now, we tried everything we could do. And
sure.
then you got to kind of and there's an emotional, you're caught up in the emotionality of it. You put your time in your effort into it. But
yeah, you take it personal.
Yeah,
sure.
And any business industry is that way.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're just so focused because it's craft beer. We are a consumer product.
It's still a consumer product.
Yeah, we are literally, all we do is we take our hat in hand and we ask somebody, please buy this.
Yeah.
That's all it is at
try
the
mine.
End of the day. Try mine.
Yeah.
Yeah. And why would I try yours and not somebody else's? So.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. And by the way, I do have that attitude as well.
Yeah.
And in fact, I've gotten more involved in my community here to try to clean up the things that I feel are out of my control. Because I'm also not a person to just go, well, it's that person's fault.
Yeah.
And it's that person's fault. It's always my fault. Jamil taught me that years ago. Remember that? Do you ever remember that piece of advice? He said to me once, everything that's wrong with your business is your fault. And I knew what he meant, right? And I've said this on air before.
Yeah,
what he meant was get in there and do something about it.
Yeah.
Or it's your fucking fault.
It is. You can't just sit back and complain away. I mean, it's just not worthwhile. It's not just not worth to do it that way.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you have to make hard decisions. Sometimes they're not popular decisions, seemingly unpopular, but they're hard. And you have to you have to decide what you want to do. What is important to you, know?
Yeah.
And I think in some parts it's there are friends of mine who are thinking about opening craft breweries right now. And I say, well, that's a great idea. What is your idea? What is your unique selling proposition? I think that's it's a challenge right now where you just can't just open a craft brewery and expect to be successful. You have to really you have to think about it. And what am I going to do? And how am I going to be different from everybody else? I mean, it's definitely a time today where if you're thinking about it, you better have your ducks in a row. This is not I mean, the cautionary tale is this. This is not easy anymore. When we got started, it was a little easy.
Mm-hmm.
And now I feel like...
Didn't feel like it then, but now in hindsight, it was easy.
It was easy. It was a lot easier. You could sell really anything that you made in some ways. And I think right now that you have to, especially a brewery of our size in the middle range of craft breweries, where we have to be very specific with what we're doing and our go-to-market strategy, and how we speak to our, national chains and also our local market and in order to be successful because we are in kind of in a pinch area, the size of our brewery, which is why we're pivoting to, getting involved in this co-packing business.
Sure.
So it's allowing us to be successful. And really at the end of the day, it's allowing us to sort of take this beer brand that we've created and have fun with it because we feel bullish on this, on the co-packing opportunity, that will allow us to essentially have fun in the beer space again.
Sure. That makes sense.
Yeah.
All right. Here's a crystal ball question then for
you. Okay. Let me get it out.
Speaking about the cycles, right? It really is a crystal ball question. I'm going to ask it anyway.
Okay.
Is there room for a brewery of the 21st Amendment size in our lifetime again? Or is it just small breweries or big breweries?
Well, I think you answered the question earlier. The cyclical nature of everything is, look, anytime in any industry, there's an explosion of growth. We've seen that in craft beer. And then there's consolidation.
A reckoning.
We've seen that. Mm-hmm. And now we've seen a reckoning and a shakeout. And that's kind of happening a little right now.
Yeah.
So the people that are smart and like are poised to sort of be successful will be successful and they'll get through this.
Okay.
You know, and that's not to sort of like, you know, throw shade on people that are having challenges, because believe me, I've been there. I understand what that's like, and I feel your pain out there. I just think that right now, you know, you've got to be really careful.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know.
It's just not as easy, like you said.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So. All right. You want to end with a get to know Sully segment? Because I don't have more questions about it. You've actually really covered, to me, we've answered a bunch of state of the industry questions without answering them all, because I actually feel like there's a ton of unanswered questions that we're just living right now. We're going to figure it out right now.
That's a good point, because there are, I mean, look, if you look at like, you know, you look at market trends, you look at IRI data, that's like, you know, that's like, you know, what's being sold at a grocery store, and you see what's like popular and what isn't popular.
Yeah.
You can kind of pivot your business on those directions. And sometimes you're right, and sometimes you're right for a year, and then it kind of changes, it goes away.
And
that's the challenge right now. You have to be...
Everything's so dynamic right now that I don't want this podcast to be out of date in 6 months or 3 months. So that's why I genuinely feel like it's not that I don't have more questions. It's that I think it would be a lot of speculation on the two of our part if I dove even further. Right? Like just speculation.
I think if you want to open a craft brewery of the 21st Amendment size, you have to have a great a great beer, great product. You have to have a great marketing plan. You have to be well-funded.
Well-funded,
and you have to think about what are you going to do? And maybe...
And well-funded now, by the way, compared to what you had to do? Jeez.
Yeah, you have to... pay for access in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
So, you know,
in everything. So business is just no different.
Yeah. It's a mature industry.
Yeah.
It's not your grandfather's brewer anymore.
No, no. All right. Let's have a little fun at the end.
Let's do it.
I started doing these random questions with guests. Okay. Have you ever been here when I did it with other guests? Cause I think it might be newer than even you sitting in as a co-host.
I don't know if I have actually, but let's do it.
They're super, super random. What's your favorite current guilty pleasure musician, band, or song? And by that, I mean like, I really like Miley Cyrus. She's a guilty pleasure of mine. Like, her music is not really my style, but it's a guilty pleasure.
So, okay, it's interesting you should say this, because I've actually started to, like, you know, person cannot live on beer alone. So actually, I have been volunteering as a community member at my local University of California, Calix radio station.
Nice.
And I'm doing shifts there. It's a broadcast station. You can also hear it on the air at klx.berkeley.edu.
Heck yeah, Sully.
So I'm doing that. I also do this like sort of pirate radio station at radiovalencia.fm.
Okay.
But so I'm like, and the thing about like at Calix, it's like, the library there at the university, it's on campus at Berkeley where you just saw the show.
Yeah.
It's like there's 155,000 pieces of music in there.
Yes. So, I think I've been in that studio. Yeah.
It's just amazing. And you have people that are like my son's age or in DJ classes with me. And then it's crazy. And
I
it's,
love this.
And so you have community members who are even older than me, you know, 42. And and they are, you know, who've been stalwarts with the station for a long time. So you have like this whole range of people. And I love the energy.
This is awesome.
It's insane. So my guilty pleasure, I will tell you this. It's interesting you said Miley Cyrus, because I think that's my guilty pleasure.
Nice. Yeah. She's like having a reckoning with people our age or something. I don't really know.
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
It's like something about her pop music sensibilities are just, they just fit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love this. Well, that's a second. You answered two questions in one, because my other one that I ask people is like, what are you super into that people don't know about? But it's like this DJ thing. You've always, you do a show with, with JP, where you guys got to spin some tunes. Yep. This has always been a passion of yours.
Yeah, it's like interesting because, you know, RadioValencia.fm is a small, you only hear it over the internet. Mm-hmm. And it's actually broadcast right next to the Makeout Room on 22nd Street in the Mission. So you go there and it's like, you know, it's just a bunch of people doing it. They say it's a duocracy. If you want to do it, you can do it.
Nice.
So it's like, it's sort of like, you know, it's a little helter skelter versus like where Calyx is like run like a ship. I mean, it's like,
okay,
you have like directors, music department directors, music library directors, you have publicity, you have all this stuff going on.
So you have to clear your playlist at Calyx?
Well, I don't have to clear it, but I have to be really, really cognizant of playing the O's.
Okay, yeah.
You cannot have obscenities.
So,
I love it. I mean, I like, you know, I've always been a guy, you know, back in the day when, remember when you used to get mixed cassette tapes?
Yeah.
Remember that? Are you old enough for that?
Of course,
so you would get those and, you know, you'd give it to your friend or you give it to, you know, maybe somebody you liked or something like that. And so it's kind of like I have a whole like plan of how I do my show, and it starts as an arc. Because like I like doing that in the morning. I'm a morning person, so, and it's like it just kind of gradually brings you in. It's like ambient music, and then I kind of like, you know, it takes off.
This is amazing.
I love it, and it's like, it's so structured at Calyx too. Like you have to do certain things all the time, and it's almost like you're surfing. You have to stay ahead of the wave, because if you get behind, you're like, oh crap, I forgot to do that spot, and I got to do this thing.
You got to do your station IDs. You got to cover your underwriting.
Exactly.
Come on, man. I'm right there with you.
Exactly.
All right, let's see.
This is fun.
Here's a good one for you.
Okay.
You're a movie guy.
Okay.
What's the best movie you've seen in the last 5 years? So that's all the leeway you get is 5 years.
Gosh.
So I know what one of your favorites is, but that's more than 5 years ago.
Yeah. Well, oh my God, I'd have to look this up. Best movie in the last 5 years?
Yeah. You can give me two if you have to, but you know, come on, just something.
It's like, you know, this question's a lot like when somebody asks you what your favorite beer is.
It is. Okay, and what because, if I because, say a best? You know, okay. It doesn't have to be the.
Okay, well, so you know that I am a fan of Wes Anderson.
Yes, okay. Yes, yeah.
I've been in a couple of his movies, by the way. That's a lie.
Amazing.
But Asteroid City, honestly, I did not expect to like that. Because I think, you know, Wes has become his own trope in some ways. It's like he has like the style that it's like, and it's been co-opted along the lines of like Andy Warhol with the soup cans and all that stuff.
Yeah.
You see it everywhere and all that. So, but Asteroid City was amazing. And I saw it in a theater.
So did I.
In Berkeley.
Yeah.
At the Elmwood.
Yeah.
And it kind of blew my mind.
So it did not blow mine. But it just came out on streaming.
Yes.
I actually was watching some of it again today, and I'm coming around.
I mean, it's...
But I'm a slow learner.
It's a crazy... It's like a movie within a movie.
Yes.
Kind of thing.
Yeah.
It has, like, this whole, like, hook in it, and you gotta, like... You're kind of confused at first, and you're like, what's going on? Oh, I see what's going on.
Yeah.
But it lands on you. But, other movies, I'd have to think about that.
That's okay. That
when you turn 40, sometimes your memory isn't very good.
Okay. You don't have any tattoos, do you?
No, I do not.
If you were to get a tattoo today, you don't get to think much about it. We're leaving after this, and you have to get a tattoo.
Okay.
What would it be?
Oh, good Lord. what would it be? Oh, my God. I've never even thought about this, honestly. I appreciate tattoo culture. I think, you know, I have friends who got a tattoo. My son just got a tattoo.
Oh, wow.
He
has
Ferdinand.
What'd he get?
He got Ferdinand the Bull, which is like really cool on his forearm.
Yeah, nice.
From the book, the children's book.
Yeah.
It looks great.
That's cool. How old is your boy?
He's doing great. I mean, he's 20 years old.
He's 20
now. 6'4". He's a huge
good
dude.
Lord.
He's like junior. He's about to go to junior in UCLA. He's just a really, really phenomenal,
that's cool,
solid person.
I'm happy to hear that, Sully.
That's probably the only thing I've done really well in life.
Come on.
And you know, he had a huge part in that. So anyway, I'll stop gloating right
he's
now.
A great
people
kid.
Have probably like turned their radios off.
I haven't seen him in years, but he's a great kid. He always is so polite. It's so nice.
He is that way. So anyway, getting a tattoo, I don't know what it would be. I've never even like sat in a
Doesn't
room.
Cross your mind, yeah.
I never think about it. I mean, Ryan was trying to get me to get a tattoo, but I don't even know what it'd be. I mean, what it would be. I mean,
probably a hop grenade then. That's my default answer for anybody who
maybe
can't
a 21st. Nico has a 21st Amendment, like brew free or die, like tattoo from an old like logo of ours.
Yeah, yeah.
Which actually works on him. Works in general because it's a call to arms, brew free or die.
Yeah.
I don't know what I would get. I feel like a...
That's all right.
I feel like a schlep.
That's okay.
I would get a Counting Crows tattoo.
There you go.
Mr. Jones. I'd get a Mr. Jones tattoo.
All right, here's one I think you'll like.
Okay.
What is a habit that you picked up from your parents? Good, bad, could be any sort of life habit. It could be one parent, not both, you know, but something that you like, oh man, I got this from them.
Okay, so a habit from one of my parents.
Yeah.
So I don't know if this is a habit,
okay,
but I have this extreme love of cooking.
Okay.
And I got it from my mom. Specifically from my mom, watching her cook, like I make some of her recipes still, and yeah, I mean that's, you know, as far as a habit goes, like something that like it sounds like that's not so, maybe you're not proud of. Is that what you're
saying? No, actually, it could be I have habits for my parents that I'm proud of, and ones that I'm not. No, it could be either. Yeah, so that's fine. If you just love to cook, I'd call that.
Yeah, my mom is like a huge influence. I still have like I'm thinking about her every day. I mean, she passed away back in 2013, but. Mm-hmm. I have like utensils that she gave me.
Nice.
I have a wok she gave me that I use.
Yeah.
So it's kind of cool when you like, you're cooking and you're using these, you know, these, you know, these utensils and, you know.
Yeah. Instruments that were hers.
That was hers or she gave them to you.
Heck,
so cool.
I totally agree with that.
And I passed that along to like that legacy to Ryan, hopefully.
Okay. I love this.
It's getting sappy. I think you want me to get a little blue here.
No, not at all. No. You're
my
you're
dad was great. A heroin addict. And
yeah.
That's the one thing that I kind of took from him.
Aside from brewing, what talent would you like to possess if you could? So presumably one you don't have.
Yes.
Yeah.
I will tell you exactly what it is.
Yeah.
So what talent I would want to possess? I'd love to be able to fly an airplane.
Oh, yeah. Make this happen.
I don't know about my age, but I have a huge fat. I'm actually concerned about it, too. I lost a friend of mine who I grew up with, who like had a private plane, and he was older, and he didn't make it, you know, so... So it actually scares the crap out of me because those are light planes, and I've been in light planes before. And so, but yeah, I mean like the ability to fly,
like,
that sounds like a lot of fun. You know, if I kind of take my like, you know, discomfort and concern away from it and like, I'd love to be I think when I was growing up, I wanted to be an airline pilot.
Okay.
I mean, I love to fly. I'm a geek about it. I sit there and watch like airplanes at like the gate and the whole ballet of like, you know, luggage comes on board. They bring in the food, you know, the gas truck comes up and, you know, refuels the plane, the gas truck. It's a gas truck. It's a Texaco truck.
I get it.
I love it.
Yeah. The whole dance, like you said.
Yeah. It's just something about it.
Okay. All right. Do you have any irrational superstitions?
I do this thing at my house. It's not a superstition, but I'll tell you what it is right now. So you've heard of my house. It's the treehouse.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've been there. Have you been there before?
I've been there, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's kind of an indoor-outdoor house. So it's like, you know, separate buildings and there's windows and doors are open. So what happens is that bugs get in there. You know, like mayflies. These big, they look like mosquitoes, but I think they're mayflies. But they can't sting you. So I have this catch-and-release program with them.
Okay.
So I literally catch bugs and I just put them, like a moth
Take
flies
them back outside.
In. I'm not going to, because if you kill them, first of all, if you look at it from this point of view, if you kill them, it's going to make a mess.
You're right.
You know, big bug. Blood, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So what I do is I just catch them, you know, and like in a cup or they're on their wing or cup them and just release them.
Yeah.
I think I'm a little bit closer to something when I do that.
So I do that with spiders only.
Yeah.
And I'm terrified of spiders. So it's a very difficult thing for me to do when I have to do it. I usually get my girlfriend to do it, to be honest with you. But it's because my Uncle Tony taught me that it's bad luck to kill spiders in the house. He could kill every other bug, but it's superstition. It's so bad luck to kill spiders in the house.
It's ingrained in you.
It's just ingrained in me. And even though I'm terrified of them, I have to admit, let them out.
So it's funny you should say that, because in, you know, in breweries, you're not supposed to kill spiders because they catch the fruit flies, because they have like the webs, and you're supposed to leave them alone and let them do their thing. So
yeah. If you could retire completely wealthy, no more money to worry about tomorrow,
yeah,
where would you live?
Well, just I have thought
stay
about
in the
this.
Treehouse. You have thought about this one.
I have thought about this. First of all, it's a challenge to come up with one specific location, because I've done a fair amount of traveling, as you know, of the years.
Yeah.
And this past year, I basically put on, you know, I went to Japan. I was in Copenhagen. I was in Iceland. I was in the Faroe Islands. Nice. I was in Germany, you know. So I right now, Copenhagen is like,
oh, I haven't been yet.
Maybe not in the winter, but it's like such a beautiful civil town. So.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's a monocultural. So, I mean, they're all like, you kind of go there and you're like, you know, you're like, what's going on here? Like a little bit.
Right.
But no, I like that. I also like Japan a lot. I don't know if I could live there, but so maybe right now I'd move to Copenhagen.
Okay.
You want to go? Let's go.
I would like you to show me Copenhagen. I got some friends there too. I've never been.
Yeah. You would love it. It's beautiful.
All right. One more.
One more. Okay.
And this one, I think you might be able to handle. I guess it's a little bit of a favorite, but it's food.
Okay.
Is there a dish, or it could be a cuisine that you just couldn't live without? And I think about this when I travel, right? Like growing up in California, I need Mexican food in my life. So when I go to Germany and these places I love, I really miss Mexican food. So is there a cuisine, you know, if you're going to move somewhere, you just can't live without?
Well, it's interesting you should say that, because, I mean, it's hard to nail it down. I mean, because sushi's up there for me, Mexican food's up there for me. Mm-hmm. But there's one particular dish.
Okay, perfect.
And so I told you my dad, my mom was the one that I inherited, or like took on the mantle of like being a cook. You know, I almost was a cook. I almost got a job at Chez Panisse, actually, in Berkeley. And that's a whole other story.
Yeah.
For another time.
Yeah, yeah.
So what happened was, but my dad has never given me that, like the cooking kind of like, you know, touch, let's say. And so, but one time he makes pasta puttanesca.
Ah.
And he taught me how to make pasta puttanesca. I think this might have been after my mom passed away.
Mm.
And I remember when I was with Ryan, he was a young boy at the time. And he would, my dad would tell the story of like, where did the name pasta puttanesca come from? And he would say, pasta puttanesca, it's the whore's pasta. Because supposedly there's a couple different stories on this in Italy, like, you know, at a whorehouse or whatever.
Yeah.
That they would make pasta puttanesca, and it would like, the smell's amazing. I mean, you have like, you know, chopped anchovies, garlic, you know, capers, red peppers. It's like, it's just amazing.
It was advertising.
It was. But also the other thing is that maybe it was like, you're waiting, you need to eat.
Okay.
While you're waiting for your turn.
Right. Yeah.
So pasta puttanesca.
Can't live without it. I love this. I couldn't live without a good bolognese, from my family.
Pizza too. I mean, it's like, there's so many, you can't like nail it down.
I know, there's a
bunch.
But
if I had to, it would be pasta puttanesca. I mean, any Italian food. I love to make Italian food.
I like it. I went for Italian food last night. Don't ask me where. It's near your house. It was brilliant. I'll tell you after the show, and then I'll put it in the show notes or something.
I think I know where it is.
It was a little family place on, I think, right on Shattuck.
Corso?
No, it's got a longer name. That's why I can't remember it.
Oh,
it's specifically Sicilian.
Was there a little mini out car, a little car out there?
Yes. Yeah, the little Fiat was out front.
Agricole, I think, is the name.
Agricole.
Yes.
Oh, it was fantastic.
Well, the vibe there is amazing. Yes. They actually did a great job during the pandemic. They put the parklet out there.
So that's where we ate, was at the parklet.
Yeah.
We went there before the concert and went there. Kate picked it out and we were just like, yeah, let's go. Just good Italian. Oh, it was unbelievable.
Plus, they really turn on the charm there.
They do. Oh, they definitely do. Yeah. It was, in fact, a little, you're like, okay, I get it.
It's a little like, you know.
But I know, we liked
the
it.
The guy's putting like a little of Italian, Mr. Grosley, what do you want? And he's going to the back like, I don't know what this guy wants. He says, I think he's got, is it a hop grenade or is it an avocado? I don't know what it is.
No, exactly. Actually, Sam went with us last minute in all of his Dodger gear. And I think half the staff came out just to make fun of them, which made the food taste better, you know. So yeah, it was pretty good.
Good old Sam.
All right, Sully. Well, that's what I got for you, man.
I love this.
Your get to know Sully at the end of the show.
Well, there you go. Hopefully, I answered things as truthfully as I could, and
you did great. It's one of my new favorite parts of the show. I keep adding to my list of questions as I go whenever I think of them, and then you know I just try to feel out the interview and give them to whoever's here.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
So, have you run into a hiccup with that? Like asking questions, and then people are like,
Yes.
Like with me with the tattoo?
No, yeah. The tattoo one's been tough for everybody, actually. So, yeah, I run into it. But you just move on. You just go, all right, no worries. Let's just move on. Certainly some guests are better than others. But in fairness, it's hard. I didn't give you those questions ahead of time.
No, it's not like
I said, hey, here's the get-to-know Sully question.
You dropped it on me.
And I don't want to do that. So the only preface I give is, hey, if you're into it, at the end of the show, I'm going to ask you random questions. Questions. That's it.
I don't even think you did that with me.
Yeah, no, I didn't. But I know that you'll be fine. So yeah. I know you well enough.
Well, I'm a professional radio DJ.
Now you are. Yeah, shoot. Your years of Brewing Network training is finally.
I think you were probably part of that. You know?
It's finally paying off.
It is.
Amazing. Well, Sully, thank you for being here and for being forthcoming and talking to us about the state of the industry. I think our listeners care about you and the 21st Amendment, to be honest with you. So I think it's cool for them to get an update. But I also think that our listeners who maybe don't know you are very interested in your take on things. So.
Well, I appreciate it. You know, I think, you know, I've been doing this for a long time now, and you sometimes don't think about that. You know, I started this industry in 94 and, of course, opened the 2NA. That project started in, like, 1998. And we've opened since 2000. So anyway, I feel like I have a certain perspective.
Yes.
But my perspective is positive.
Yes.
And I think that, you know, even though we're going through challenges right now, I think what David Walker says, it's our story to tell. It's our beer to brew. Mm-hmm. And you just have to make sure you're doing the best you can and that you're relevant and that you're running a solid business.
Yeah. Yeah.
And sometimes there's a lot of challenges that come along with that. So
sure.
It's all coming back, folks.
It is. It will. It is. Your perspective, I think, is unique. You're a mentor of mine. You know that. So I've always cared about your outlook on things. So it's good for me to hear what you think is happening too.
We'll hug after this.
Yeah, of course we will. Yeah. Oh, wait. Wrong song. Wrong closing song, Sully.
Mr. Jones.
Let's try this one. Yeah. He didn't even sing it. I was so upset. I mean, he sang it, but he didn't sing it, you know. You know what I really wanted to hear that I didn't hear? My favorite is Mrs. Potter's Lullaby.
That's my favorite, too. I have like, great memories of listening to that song when my mom was in the hospital. Tearjerker for me.
Yeah. It's my dad just passed. Same thing.
Yes.
I reinvigorated that song into my life with my dad just passing. So,
oh,
see, Sully, we have these same emotions.
Symbotical.
We probably see the same shrink. We don't just don't
exactly.
know it. They're not allowed to tell, so we just
don't
know it.
Justin Richard? What, who?
Yeah. Well, he didn't play it, though. In fairness, it's like an 8-minute song, so they probably never do it live, but.
I think I've heard him play it live before.
Oh, you have? I might have to go to another show.
You should go see Wilco. That's coming up soon.
Let's do that together.
Yeah, I've got tickets to that.
I'm down. Is that also at the Greek?
At the Greek.
All right, let's do it.
All right.
All right, Sully, thank you for being here. Go to 21st-amendment.com. You can learn everything you need about the new releases. You can also just keep listening to the Brewing Network because I tell you all the time. But go to 21st-amendment.com and check it out. You can probably email Sean. It's like Sean at 21st-amendment or something.
Yeah,
you'll
send
find
me
him.
An email. Tell me what you think. Tell me if I'm, you know.
If you got questions. If you
want
to know about
the pivot. What kind of tattoo you want to get.
There you go. Yeah. All right, we got a few more shows coming up soon for you. A new brewery out of Canada is coming down, all the way down to the studio. They're going to hang out with us. I'm working on getting Cellar Maker in here. I talked to Connor. Going to come tell the story about buying the Rare Barrel and doing their thing.
That's right. I remember they did that.
We got good stuff coming up for you here at the Brewing Network. Plus, I'll be at the Great American Beer Festival soon, so say hi if you see me. All right, everybody. Thanks for doing what you do out there. Take care of yourselves and your beer.